Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Lady in Ermine, the story of a woman who painted the Renaissance, a novel about Sofonisba Anguissola, by Donna Di Giuseppe, narrated by Nicole Zanzarella. Behold the beautiful and wise portraitist, the noble Sofonisba of Cremona, who today may be called contented to render only perfection and beauty. Giulio Cornelio Graziani, 1597. Part 1. Renaissance Girl, 1535-1559. Chapter 1. Prince's Parade, Cremona, Lombardy, Italy, September 21, 1549. Sofonisba was alone in cavernous San Sigismondo. As the other parishioners mingled outside after Mass, sweating in their finery, their velvets and satins embroidered with silver and gold, Sofonisba remained in front of the high altar, transfixed by one tiny face that radiated back at her amid the clusters of angels and patrons that hovered around it. With large, pleading eyes, Saint Daria seemed to cry out to Sofonisba. Sofonisba had studied this painting, Giulio Campi's Virgin in Glory, her entire life. Indeed, it was almost as old as she, 6 years away from 20. But this morning, the eyes taunted her, beseeching her, no, daring her.
"Sophie, there you are."
Her father's deep voice startled her.
"I've been looking for you."
"Father, you see her face?"
Sofonisba stretched an arm toward the painting, exposing a tiny leather bag. Her father had given her this bag to use as an art kit. He even allowed her to use it during Mass, concealed under her wrap. Amilcare smiled despite his impatience. Mass had an effect on Sofonisba. She often lost herself in a world of invenzione as she studied the paintings around her, while Father Patrizio mumbled in Latin, his back to the congregation.
"Father, of all these swirling figures, what moves me is one face there on the left."
She pointed beyond the mountainous Madonna to a small figure.
"You see Saint Daria peeking out from the foreground? I feel like she's communicating to me alone."
Sofonisba glanced at her father, her enormous eyes glistening from her moon-like face.
"I don't mean to sound disrespectful."
Amilcare had a hand in commissioning most of the church's paintings, one of his duties as a local decurion. Instead of focusing on Campi's painting, Amilcare's gaze went to his daughter's blackened fingernails, and he recalled an event earlier that week. He and some fellow decurions had gathered at his shop on the town square to discuss arrangements for today's visit from the Spanish prince. Sofonisba rushed past them on her way home from Master Campi's studio, a rolled-up canvas under her right arm, paintbrushes clutched in her left hand.
"Amilcare, there's your Sophie,"
one of the decurions said. Amilcare simply nodded.
"My friend," the man persisted, "how can you let the girl parade through town like that? Aren't you afraid of discouraging suitors?"
"I only want what any father wants, a better life for my children,"
Amilcare said quietly.
"And you think the girl will prosper more pretending to be Leonardo da Vinci than through an advantageous marriage?"
Amilcare shrugged off the comment, accustomed to townspeople frowning on his decision to permit his eldest daughter and her sister to study in Master Campi's studio, a studio full of men of lower rank, men not related to her, men who might forego their shirts when the temperature rose. Amilcare had encouraged all his daughter's talents, as if trying to prove himself. He might be a member of the nobility now, albeit lower nobility, and a respected decurion, but his past spurred him to promote the family name relentlessly.
"Father,"
Sofonisba said, drawing Amilcare's attention back to the painting,
How can we see the soul of the Savior when he's overshadowed by the crowd of angels that surround him? That face of Saint Daria grips me more than all the rest.
Amilcare smiled affectionately at his earnest daughter. Her ambitions rivaled his own.
Sophie, the prince will arrive shortly. I must meet the Decurions. Go home with your mother and sisters and make ready for the parade.
Sophonisba crushed the red geraniums in their terracotta pots as she leaned over the family's balcony to count the townspeople gathering on the street below. She lost track as they moved about, jostling for a better view of the Grand Viale leading to the town square. Soldiers began shepherding them aside in anticipation of the prince and his retinue.
"They're coming!"
cried young Minerva, hearing the clop-clopping of hooves on cobblestone. The Anguissola sisters began angling for a spot on the balcony. 12-year-old Lucia elbowed Sofonisba from behind. Elena wedged a hand between the two to make peace. Mama Bianca and the servant, holding baby Europa, gathered close. All were smiling, giddy, except for Sofonisba, who felt numb with anticipation. The parade rounded the corner. The prince's Toledo armor sparkled. Confetti of yellow marigolds engulfed him. Sofonisba stretched across the railing as far as she could to see him. Her pulse raced. She fantasized that he might stop at their balcony to ask her name and then commission her to paint for his collection. She imagined herself curtsying deeply before him, offering him her life's work.
"A painting to commemorate your majesty's legacy," she would say.
"One sees her talent in her eyes," the prince would say for all to hear.
Lucia pushed Sofonisba into the flower pots, competing for a view the way she competed for attention. A geranium broke off its stem, and its innocent red flower fell from the balcony into the flotilla of yellow marigolds and landed right into the prince's lap, nestling between his codpiece and his horse's mane. The stunned prince looked up for the source of the fugitive flower, and Sofonisba felt his steely eyes bore straight into hers. Instantly, the prince's eyes softened from accusation to curiosity. For Sofonisba, the moment felt like an eternity. As he continued toward the town square, Prince Philip's questioning eyes remained in Sofonisba's imagination, crystallizing her calling. One day, she would paint the portrait that showed the king's soul through his eyes. The greatest accomplishment for a, dare she think it, a portraitist. Chapter 2. Virgin Portrait with Book, Cremona, 1555. Sofonisba intercepted Marco on his way down the hall to tutor her younger sisters. She whispered to keep her mother from hearing her distract him from his paid duties.
"Master Marco, I have a new concept I would like to discuss."
She thought he suppressed a smile as she tugged his sleeve and led him into the sitting room next to the library where her sisters awaited their tutor. Marco never passed up an opportunity to talk with her. Now 20, Sofonisba no longer studied under him, but they continued to exchange ideas. The two gravitated toward each other, but stifled their mutual attraction. They both knew Amilcare would never consent to a match between his daughter and the tutor. That had been tested 2 years prior. She and Marco were discussing her final dissertation, and their fingertips touched when he handed her the Book of the City of Ladies. His simple touch shot a spark through her body, and an image came to her. The scholar and the artist in their little studio in the back of their little house. She squeezed his hand and smiled up at him. Then her father's voice came from the hallway.
"Master Marco, I think you should leave."
Before Sofonisba could object, Marco gathered his books and hurried off as commanded. She heard the door downstairs close behind Marco, with her mother's surprised farewell trailing after him. Sofonisba glowered at her father.
Was that necessary, Father? Nothing inappropriate happened?
Take care with Master Marco, Sophie. You are no longer a child. Now that you've finished your studies, you can focus entirely on your art.
Sofonisba straightened. Father, I would like to speak to you about Marco. He's kind and gentle, like you, Father.
Amilcare shook his head as if not comprehending.
Sofonisba squeezed her eyes shut, and then opened them wide. May we consider him for my future husband?
Amilcare jolted backward slightly and shook his head. Out of the question.
But why? Why can't I marry him if I see he can make me happy? You should be happy too. He approves of my art.
This is an infatuation, daughter. When a suitable match arises for you, Sophie, I will consult your opinion. But Marco is beneath you.
Beneath me? Look at his accomplishments. Marco is learned and hard-working, and he has a waiting list for pupils.
Amilcare took a seat and looked down at his hands. He said nothing at first. He took a deep breath. We have the Anguissola family crest, Sofonisba, but I didn't always. I didn't have any name, so to speak. When I was not much younger than you are now, I had to do service before my father recognized me. 2 years filled with plenty of degrading insults.
He grimaced and shook his head.
You see, I was born out of wedlock. A bastard. A natural child, if you want to be polite about it. I never thought I would need to tell you this, but I will never forget what I endured. I simply cannot let you marry down. Especially after I've let you train in painting against everyone's advice.
Never before had Sofonisba seen shame in her father's eyes. It pained her to realize that his incessant drive was more than raw ambition. It was a deep need for approval. The episode matured her. It was then that she adopted her father's campaign for legitimacy as her own.
Sofonisba was well over her romantic feelings for Marco now. All that remained between them was friendship and intellectual camaraderie. He was retained as tutor for her sisters and little brother Asdrubale, who was born around the time Sofonisba inquired about marriage to Marco. Her father's birthright confession coincided with the birth of his hoped-for male heir. Amilcare could pass on the name he fought so hard to earn.
Master Marco, Sofonisba said once inside the sitting room, I've been pondering how to paint science. I want to do a painting where I can depict the new world of ideas in a way that everyone can understand.
That's a lot of content for one painting. Will this be a thematic piece, not your usual portraiture?
I would like to accomplish the theme within a portrait. I'm thinking of depicting all of science in the portrait of one man. Anyway, I need to find a subject bigger than myself to paint. My self-portraits haven't earned me a commission, despite Father's tireless efforts.
A depiction of Leonardo, perhaps. A tribute to his tenure under Ludovico il Moro.
Yes, Leonardo could represent all of science, but I don't know what he looks like. I can't misrepresent the likeness of Leonardo da Vinci.
Good point. Heresy. How about an astronomer? Not the sailors who navigate the stars for practical transport, but a Dominican astronomer. One of those priests coming out of Milan who reads the stars to learn about our world. Ideas are circulating even among churchmen that question our Earth's position in the universe.
An astronomer priest. Science and religion. I could show his craft through his instruments and his pious curiosity in his face.
And will you sign this piece, Sofonisba?
Marco cocked his head.
She generally avoided signing her work in order to appear modest.
Her mother often cautioned that it wasn't worth risking unnecessary ire.
Sofonisba took a breath. Very well, I will sign this one.
And perhaps...
Her voice trailed off.
Do you not teach that Leonardo wrote backwards? She asked. It's said he wrote this way so that others could not easily steal his ideas.
Then, as a tribute to Leonardo, I will sign my Dominican astronomer backwards.
I'll shield my modesty the way Leonardo tried to protect his ideas.
Clever. Marco pointed his forefinger to the ceiling and turned to head for the library where the children awaited him.
By the time Marco emerged from the library after the children's lesson, Sofonisba had progressed in her study.
Ah, Master Marco.
She waved a piece of parchment in her hand.
Do you think the Dominican astronomer concept might widen my audience? Perhaps lead to a public commission?
He smiled at her optimism, then sighed.
Your work may never make it into public forums.
Have the town decurions yet appointed you to paint for them, even with your father's influence?
He didn't wait for a reply.
And the local courts in Mantua and Parma already have permanent painters. Men, Sofonisba.
Which court will take a chance on a woman? How could they compensate you?
For a woman in your position, accepting payment would demean you.
Then why do I continue to paint at all if I have no commissions and no place to show my work? I'm 20 years old. My options are narrowing.
She looked away from Marco, hoping he did not see her blush, remembering her old crush on him.
The local lords can only do so much. Submit your work to them as you must, but you will need a higher authority to move the boundaries of decorum and find the acceptance you need as a woman painter.
Sofonisba remembered locking eyes with Prince Philip as he passed under their balcony.
Exquisite advice, Master Marco. But how exactly will I accomplish that? How does someone like me gain access?
I travel enough to see the art being produced throughout Lombardy these days. Portraiture has taken deep root in our region since Leonardo's time. You have a natural talent, Sofonisba.
Marco pointed at the parchment in her hand.
Perhaps you will be the one to continue what Leonardo started.
Please, I can't even manage his script. Look.
She held up her scribbled parchment. At the best, I can write upside down.
Marco stepped closer to her.
It may require a touch of serendipity, but you must get your work to the king. If he admires it, your sex won't be a detriment. Let your father promote your work to the local lords, and don't be hurt when they reject you. It has been 2 decades since I escaped the life that was expected of me as the son of a butcher, and still I see condescension in the eyes of my patrons.
Marco winced.
Be strong and confident until you get an audience with His Majesty. To get beyond the common requires the extraordinary, Sofonisba. You need to produce your true masterpiece.
Goosebumps shot up her arm as he said the word that both encouraged and dismayed her, but more than anything, energized her. Masterpiece. This learned, striving intellectual accepted her and guided her. Marco had been a gift to Sofonisba, even if he could never be more than that. Chapter 3. Occupation. Milan, April 1555. At first, Sofonisba was motivated by the simplicity of Marco's advice. Just be at the right place at the right time and present a masterpiece to the king. She holed herself up in her studio, determined to produce a piece worthy of her talent, her training, her father, and her tutor. But as days turned into weeks and nothing unfolded, his advice became her burden. The word weighed on her, masterpiece. She no longer had even an idea, much less a masterpiece.
Her spirits plummeted. She stood for hours in front of an empty easel in her studio in the rear of the house, formerly the family's gardening shed, which they had fitted with windows for natural light so she could mix her colors and air out the smell. She spent days on end beginning new attempts, managing only to waste more materials. April came, and Sofonisba was still wrestling with her insecurities when Milan announced a new Spanish governor, Fernando Alvarez de Toledo, 3rd Duke of Alba, Captain General of Italy, acting governor of Milan, and viceroy of Naples, was set to descend upon Lombardy with an army and the full confidence of the aging Spanish king, Prince Philip's father, Charles V, otherwise known as the Holy Roman Emperor. Alba's first act was to put his son in charge of the Spanish troops in Lombardy. Rumors spread. Occupation was not new to Lombardy. France had ruled Lombardy during the first quarter of the century, until the Battle of Pavia in 1525, when the Spanish defeated them and took control. Elsewhere on the Italian peninsula, battles for Italian territory and artistic treasures continued. The Italian regions welcomed or resisted the French or the Spanish as best they could. Until now, the Spanish governed Lombardy loosely, mostly in name. The locals feared that was about to change under Alba and his extended family. Shortly after Alba's people were installed in Milan, a scandal erupted. Sofonisba heard about it from Marco before he gave morning lessons to the children. He found her in her studio, staring at a blank canvas perched on its easel.
"Big news, signorina. It's not taken long for our new overlords to shed blood in our region. Not due to Lombard resistance, mind you, but from Spanish corruption."
Sofonisba rolled her eyes slightly at his interruption, feigning irritation, even though she was happy for the distraction.
"Alba's enormous entourage in Milan is being housed with Spanish lords, the Prince and Princess of Ascoli," Marco said. "The unit is guarded by a Spanish captain named Pedro de Mendoza, said to be the brother of a powerful Spanish cardinal, the Cardinal of Burgos."
"I've seen this captain in the piazza," Sofonisba said, smiling.
"Sorry to disappoint, but an Ascoli lady-in-waiting has already caught his eye."
"I thought attendants were guarded like nuns."
"Customarily. This cunning lady let down her veil just enough to encourage the captain, who must have found opportunities for romance. What he did not know was that an Ascoli retainer caught wind of the affair. The retainer knew he had to prevent Captain Mendoza from bringing disgrace upon the house, so he lay in wait hoping to catch the man sneaking into the lady's quarters, intending to shame him into ending the affair. The simple plan was botched. Mendoza reacted violently. A fight ensued. Others joined the fray. A man was killed. In the chaos, Mendoza escaped."
Sofonisba was wide-eyed.
"Desertion from the king's army?
As brother of the Cardinal of Burgos, he must be confident his family ties will protect him. There's more. Reports are that the Duke of Alba flew into a rage and summarily imprisoned the Prince and Princess of Ascoli for failure to control their staff."
"Spanish princes imprisoned?
Imagine. Naturally, they were released within the hour. I can only assume that Alba wished to impress upon us that he is decisive and impartial. He's already benefited from the whole sordid affair, earning begrudging respect in town. You know how the merchants value order above all else."
After the scandal, Pedro de Mendoza's reputation grew each time his story was told. Sofonisba could not have admitted to Marco, but she understood what tempted the lady-in-waiting. She had spotted Mendoza in the city center, not exactly a handsome man, but commanding. One day she would paint the swagger of Pedro de Mendoza and title it Portrait of a Soldier. Not long after the Ascoli-Mendoza scandal, Amilcare announced at family dinner that he would leave for Milan at week's end.
The Duke of Alba is convening a council to discuss reform for the region. He's calling for a foreign podestà. Naturally, the Decurions are curious about the implications. This outsider will be charged to judge legal disputes here in Cremona. I have been nominated to appear at the regional council in Milan.
Then let's kill two birds with one stone, his wife said. What if the Decurions present Alba with a painting by Sofonisba?
If he is as fair-minded as his handling of the Ascoli-Mendoza scandal suggests, perhaps he would be willing to consider a piece from a girl. And he certainly has the king's ear.
Amilcare and Bianca both looked at Sofonisba.
But which piece? Sofonisba asked.
I dare say your Dominican astronomer seems too risky to offer, Bianca said, especially from a girl.
One of your self-portraits will do nicely, Amilcare said.
Virgin with book, girl at the clavichord? Sofonisba sighed.
My little girl self-portraits will be dismissed as dilettante painting, or worse, my ploy to attract a husband. I wish I were ready with the perfect...
Her voice trailed off before she could repeat the word she was beginning to despise. Masterpiece. A week later, Amilcare was in Milan, surrounded by dozens of representatives from all over Lombardy, sent to gather information about Alba's intended reforms. Amilcare was disappointed to realize he would not have a private meeting with the Duke as he had imagined. He would have to be assertive if he wanted to get Sophie's portrait to the Duke. He saw his chance when he was given a seat on the center aisle in the meeting hall. As Alba proceeded down the aisle toward the front riser, Amilcare stepped onto the processional rug in front of him. Alba instinctively put his hand on his sword, then leaned back and smiled when Amilcare held out a package wrapped in red velvet.
Your Grace, may I present a gift from the Council of Decurions of Cremona?
Amilcare proffered the package to the Duke, who took it with a polite nod before continuing to the end of the hall to address the assembly. Toward the end of the governor's banquet later that evening, the Duke of Alba sent a servant to invite Amilcare to approach the head table. Amilcare was happy to spot Sofonisba's portrait displayed next to the Duke's chair. In addition to being a general and statesman, Alba was known to be an art collector. Alba gestured to the piece.
Thank you for the gift. The portrait is moving. I see it is inscribed Sofonisba Anguissola, Vergo. You give me a portrait of your daughter, sir. It is a portrait of my daughter, Your Grace. She is also the painter. This is her self-portrait.
Alba cocked his head to the side without speaking, a polite smile frozen on his face. Amilcare straightened.
We are blessed with many masters in our region, Your Grace. I admit I made a selection close to my heart. My virtuous daughter Sofonisba has trained with master painters and looks to serve the king with her work.
The Duke of Alba sucked in a quick breath.
The king, sir? You are serious?
He paused and scrutinized the portrait with his expert eye. Not many fathers would venture such an unnatural role for his daughter. Yet one can see she has talent. The Duke looked from Amilcare to the portrait and back again, as if judging the character of the man from the quality of the painting.
Dare I say, her work reminds me of the portraitist Anthony Moore. Is such occupation common for women in Lombardy? All my daughters are exceptional. However, critics say my eldest paints as if called by God, Your Grace.
The Duke closed his eyes and nodded, as if he were considering why God might call a girl to such a craft, then motioned to his servant, who touched Amilcare's elbow to escort him back to his seat. His audience with the Duke of Alba, Captain General of Italy, was finished. When Amilcare returned home to Cremona, the family greeted him at the door. Bianca asked straight away,
How did the Duke like it?
He loved it. truly. He likened it to the work of Anthony Moore.
Reading her father's pat response, Sofonisba said, "So nothing came of it."
Sample complete. Ready to continue?